Hello, everyone. Welcome to Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. I'm your host, Willie Morales. On today's show, I have Brian Gill. Brian is a computer scientist, an entrepreneur, and angel investor. Brian, thank you so much for being on today's Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. How are you?
William, I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm good. So, Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into this space? Was this something that you fell into? This is something that you always wanted to do as a youngster? How did this come about, this getting into the IT field and being an entrepreneur and angel investor? So that's basically three questions in one.
Yeah. So, I mean, I started as a young man. I wrote my first computer program when I was 8 years old.
Unbelievable.
So
you had like, this, you had the Steve Jobs / Bill Gates in you already.
I have about a 20,000th of their net worth, but yeah, it was, I liked computers at a very early age. I was a nerdy kid and really liked programming languages and doing this stuff. And when I went to college and everything, it was a pretty easy decision to kind of get into computer science. And I happened to be graduating in the first internet pets.com type bubble, you know, around 98, when things were starting to go crazy and Yahoo was worth trillions of dollars and, you know, Ask Jeeves was a thing, you know, so that era. So I picked up and moved out to California, played in the startup game, you know, hit like a couple of bunt singles, you know, like it, I did not make the kind of money that I wanted to make when I moved out there. The NASDAQ exploded and I knew I had not lost the entrepreneurial bug though. And I had learned a lot of hard lessons and wanted to start my own company at that point. Right. And you couldn't pick the worst time to do it. The economy was in tatters. It was a major financial crisis. There was no venture capital or angel investments around, or if you could find somebody to invest, they were going to take like 98% of your company.
Right, right.
You know, so it was really a dark time, and it took the valley out in California. It took them a while. It took like 6 or 7 years before things really picked back up again. And but I wasn't going to wait for that. I wanted to do something. So I knew I needed to bootstrap it. Whatever I did, it needed to be able to make revenue like in the first 6 months.
Right.
And I was armed with about as much capital as I had in the checking account, which, you know, was less than six figures. So myself and a couple of my, you know, business partners, my brother Tyler, we kind of walked through a bunch of business plans, threw around a lot of crazy ideas, and we settled on disaster recovery in IT, specifically something called data recovery of failed storage. Okay. So if a small business has a server crash, or if your hard drive starts clicking, or you drop an iPhone in a toilet, or an SD card on your memory, you're a wedding photographer and you push the wrong button and deleted all the wedding photos of the wedding shoot you're on, whatever the disaster is, we wanted to be able to help people out of that. Okay. And it's a service business and it required a lot of brains, and, you know, it did require about $75,000 of startup capital, but it was a number that I could swing without going to a bank. Mm-hmm. I was a young man, no kids, no wife, none of that. So I was ready to blow it on whatever crazy idea we were going to pick.
Right.
And, you know, that company turned out pretty well. I'm still working there now. So it's been almost 17 years. But it was a small niche boutique service business. It was never going to be huge. Mm-hmm. And I identified that even in the first year, we knew that. We knew it was never going to be a $50 million company.
Okay.
The whole market might be $50 million. So we knew it was not ever going to be huge, huge. And, you know, we wanted to be huge, huge. So we started a couple other companies. And that's really where my kind of entrepreneurial journey started. I had success with this one company that was mine. Me and my buddies used that as seed capital, start up some other things. Some of them have gotten acquired along the years. Some of them have raised huge amounts of venture capital. And I've got a pretty good life now.
Nice. So, you know, touching base on IT a little bit, because this is something that all of us that have companies from the mom and pop to the Warren Buffetts of the world, can you explain to me what, and you touched base on it, ransomware is, what is that? If you could go step by step, like,
I'll break it down for you.
Yeah,
here.
Like so, a quick educational experience for all of us.
So it's just like if you got abducted in a country and, you know, a gang of people was trying to tell your family to pay $500,000 to release William, you know. Right. It's exactly the same thing, only it's with data. And a whole bunch of things have happened that have kind of had this ugly baby of ransomware. So one of the parents is cryptocurrency. So we have this now, this ability with Bitcoin to anonymously and instantly transfer vast amounts of cryptocurrency, which is widely adopted as actual currency now, and may actually be increasing in value as the dollar is decreasing in value as we, you know, print 5 trillion of it a month. Right. So, so that's technology number one. You can get instantly paid millions of dollars, and it's a one-way ticket, and it's there in seconds, and you don't know who's on the other end. Mm-hmm. Just a wallet.
Wow. Okay.
So it's not like, at least in the old days, if you got abducted by somebody, they'd have to have like a briefcase full of cash and maybe the FBI guys jump out of the bushes.
Right.
That's not happening. There's no bushes. I mean, there are bushes, but they're not relevant to this conversation. You can, these guys just want anonymous payment and they give you a wallet ID and there it goes. Untraceable, or very, very close to untraceable. Mm-hmm. The second thing is encryption. So you can quickly and easily, in a couple of hours, fully encrypt many, 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 many terabytes of data. And this wasn't a thing 20 years ago. You could encrypt things, but you could not encrypt petabytes of data in 35 minutes.
Right.
But you can now, and encryption really, really works. The good news is when we put BitLocker on our computers, when we run these types of encryption technologies, they actually work. It's all the computing power on planet Earth for a couple millennia to even brute force one password, at least until we get the quantum computing going a little bit further. But for now, the encryption is really rock solid, really, really good. And the final one is hacking. And hacking's been around since computers have been around.
Right.
And con men have been around since, you know, the earliest days of the economy. I'm sure there's guys back in Rome scamming each other out of whatever's, I don't know, drachmas, you know.
Right, so
all this stuff has basically gotten to a point where a bad guy tricks you, usually through some sort of social engineering or phishing. They trick you. They're a con man. They get on to your network and they encrypt. About 5 o'clock on Friday, they wait for you to go home and start drinking your beer, and they jump on your network and they start encrypting everything. And you get to the office on Monday morning and you have a ransom note on everybody's monitor that says, if you want your data, you need to pay us a lot of money, usually like $50,000 worth of Bitcoin or so, sometimes more, sometimes less. But they're on the network. They understand how big the company is. They understand the market they're in. They're probably reading your QuickBooks file, so they know how profitable you are.
Right.
They might even log into your checking account to see how much money you have, because they've hacked you. They've owned you. And then you're going to get a ransom note that's probably painful, but doable.
Jeez.
And you're going to pay the ransom to get your own stuff back. Yeah. And this is called ransomware, and it's happening to hundreds of businesses every single day, and it's growing exponentially.
So is encryption the way to go to protect that data? Like what steps can we do to protect our data from being hacked? I mean, you know, it's weird, Brian, that you mentioned something like, I remember a few months ago, I got an email and it went to spam, and you know, I didn't open anything, but it was like from Nigeria, where if I contact this guy, he'll send me so much money. And
So that old you know, Nigerian prince scam is, you know, that's like a guy dealing 3 Cod Monty, you know, that's the very lowest end of the criminal spectrum.
Right.
Right. Still not good people, but very, very, very few people are going to fall for that crap. Most people are going to say, yeah, like I'm pretty sure this guy's gonna steal my $100 if I try to play $100 three card Monty on the street somewhere. Like I'm probably gonna lose because he's probably really good at what he does. Like most people can put that together and don't think that they have some relative from Sweden that they've never heard of that's just left them $13 million. Like most people can figure that out. Right. This is different. What happens here is you get an email from one of your buddies. Mm-hmm. Or maybe one of your employees gets an email from williammorales13@gmail.com that says, hey, this is William, you know, do something. And it's usually a small ask, like, hey, you know, is Barbara in the office today? And they say, yeah, Barbara's in the office. Great. Can you guys have her reset my password?
Wow. Just like that.
Just like that. And now they're going to do something like that where they trick you into giving up access. Sometimes they don't need to trick you because you're really bad at what you do in an IT world. You have bad hygiene. So, you know, maybe you get one of those other emails and it says, hey, log on to your Dropbox account. I just shared a document with you. And you click the button and you go to Dropbox and you put in your username and password. And then, you know, the document isn't there and you're like, well, that's weird. Well, what just happened was that wasn't Dropbox. That was Dropbox spelled wrong. DR0P0X or something, right?
Right, right.
But when you went to the website, it looked exactly like Dropbox. They basically screen scraped Dropbox and it looks like Dropbox. You put in your username and password there. And if you're a bad human and you have the same password everywhere, well, now they have your password. Moreover, they also have your IP address.
Right.
So if you don't have a big firewall in between you and them, come 5 o'clock on Friday, they're going to try to remote desktop onto your box and they're going to try a certain password. And if they get onto your box, now the fun starts. They're going to try to access the network drive. They're going to try to figure out how you back your data up. They're going to try to mitigate those backups, encrypt all the data on the network, plant a bunch of backdoors, send a bunch of emails to your tenants saying, hey, could you, instead of, I've got a special this month. If you pay in Bitcoin, I'll give you 20% off your rent. Here's the wallet.
My God. I mean,
the stuff gets bad in a hurry. Yeah.
Yeah. I could see. So, all right. So you being in that field, let's say I have a real estate company, you know, five people, that's all we have, but everybody has a laptop. What are the steps for us to protect ourselves? Obviously, you know, you always have a password that they always say you have to make it strong. Capital, the first capital letter, and then, letters, numbers, all combined. Is that one of the ways to protect ourselves with a combination
no.
of maybe? Okay. Thank you for putting me right in my place.
No. So here's the thing. One of the reasons that I was super excited to do your show is we have a above average ratio of real estate professionals who get burned by ransomware and get burned by data loss.
Right.
Because to your point, sometimes you can have these companies where they own $50 million of commercial real estate and it's run by four people. Right. So you have some of these really small companies with some really big assets, which makes them a big, juicy target for the bad guys. That's exactly what they want. Moreover, you have a lot of non-technologists, people who are later in life, successful people. Technology's kind of passed them by a little bit, and they're wealthy and they own all this real estate. Right. So you've got all these like rich non-technologists with small companies who don't understand IT, who move a lot of money around and have a lot of money available. This is a criminal's dream target. And so what are you going to do about it?
Right.
I will share, you know, after this, I'll send you an email with a couple of links to a couple articles that have some recommendations, but here's a couple of things. If you're, can people see the video of this? Or is this all audio?
No, it's video. Yeah.
Okay, well, what we got here this thing's called a YubiKey. I don't make this. I don't sell it. You can buy them on Amazon for about $50. Mm-hmm. It will do your password management. And I use that term loosely because it's actually a emerging technology to do pretty much passwordless entry. And if you want to log into your systems, you have to physically have this key. The bad guys are going to have a hard time getting a hold of this.
Okay. Because
it's in my pocket. So, and I can't get phished. This thing is smart enough that if I accidentally went to DR0P, you know, BOX, mm-hmm. it's not Dropbox. This thing does not get fooled by phishing.
Right.
So it will not cough up the authentication. Okay. It will also, if a website, you know, has kind of an archaic username password exclusive, like it'll automatically generate random messes of stuff for you that you don't have to memorize. So you buy two of these things, you back them up, and that's the way to go. User authentication is...
What's the name of that key, Brian? I'm sorry.
This is a YubiKey. It's YubiKey. There's a whole bunch of products that make the spec, but YubiKey is the one that I personally use, that I really enjoy, that I think has the cleanest, simplest interface. You do have to remember the key, but now you don't have to remember 500 crazy passwords.
Brian, and you hit it right. I just want to touch base on that because I'm a guy that has, you know, a bunch of websites I go on to and or emails and all that. And I have a notebook or should I say pieces of paper, maybe double this with passwords listed. And if I forget it, I'm like, shoot, what the hell am I going to do now? You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And if you forget this key, but again, it's actually shaped like a key and it has a hole. Guess what? For your keys.
Right.
Put it right on your actual keychain.
Love it.
So it's a nice product and it works and it solves it. It's a big way. It's a massive step forward to user authentication. Mm-hmm. And even non-technologists can figure it out. And it's, if you're rocking usernames and passwords everywhere, stop it. But the other part of that is two-factor authentication. Your Gmail, your Facebook, your bank, all of these services should allow for two-factor or multi-factor authentication. And the next thing that you can log in with after you put in your username and password or do your first authentication with your key is like a rotating digit code on like a Google Authenticator. Right. You probably can't see it because of this hammer, but it's basically, I sync up with these websites when I sign up, I scan a little QR code, and now we have a secret contract, and it's a rotating million digit code that's always random. And if somebody were to somehow penetrate my first user authentication, they're going to get bit by the second one. All sounds crazy. It's not. It's $50 and it's free. And when I go to log into stuff, it takes me like 3 seconds instead of like 2 seconds.
Right.
It's a small inconvenience and a small amount of money to get much, much better about your user authentication or how the internet knows who you are and knows those people are not you.
Right.
Second big thing is backups. Backups, 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 backups. Your critical data needs to get backed up. And it needs to happen in an automated fashion. It needs to get to a different network. Mm-hmm. So you can download something like iDrive or StorageCraft or Carbonite and pay $50 to $100 a year to have all the data on one computing device get automatically encrypted, put up in the cloud. Put on the two-factor authentication on your backups.
Okay.
Because you don't want somebody logging into your backups with just a username and password and then having access to all of your very sensitive financial data. So you have to, the user authentication thing is everywhere. It's not just your laptop. It's not just Gmail. It's not just your bank. It's also your third-party cloud services, including your backups. And if you have employees, you have to do it. And if you're listening to this and you've got your boss is like 65 or 70 and he's ancient, he has to do it. Right. And I know he's your boss, but you have to say, listen, you know, Frank, dude, like you're ancient. You're going to get hacked. You're going to take us all down with you. Please, for the love of God, here's your YubiKey. Train them how to use it. With your backups, you have to audit them.
Okay.
So again, and a lot of people say, well, I don't know how I back it up. I have an IT guy. That's, you've stopped short of your responsibilities as a business owner or a business principal. Mm-hmm. You need to demand of your managed service provider or your IT guy, how do we back data up? Is it protected with two-factor authentication? When is the last time you downloaded my backup and made sure it had all my stuff in it, and it was from July 2020, and it wasn't from 2015? And yeah, you're going to have to pay them some money to perform that audit. Spend more money.
Right.
Get better at your IT. I mean, so again, like I could riff for another 10 hours, but start with your user authentication, start with your backups. And once, if you've got backups on a different network that's perfected with multi-factor that you've audited recently, you're never going to be held hostage for your own data.
Right. Do we see in your travels, let's say we're talking about laptops, are all laptops in terms of protection the same? Do we need, if I have, let's say, I have an Apple MacBook Air, how do I protect my data? You know, because they always say, oh, MacBooks never get hacked. I don't believe that one bit. I think, like, I'm going by what you're telling me as an expert.
In general, yeah. Macintosh is a more stable and a more secure computing ecosystem. Mm-hmm. They tend to have strong encryption everywhere. They tend to work pretty hard on user authentication themselves. Mm-hmm. If the bad guys are to find a smartphone on the street, it's very unlikely they're going to be able to get at any of that information.
Right.
But you remember that big, all those celebrities getting hacked like a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And that was a cloud hack. And there was a couple different components of that hack, but it all came down to user authentication. Not of the phone that was in the celebrity's pocket. It was authentication to their cloud accounts. So like I was saying earlier, understand where your data goes and make it a little bit painful even for you to log into it.
Right.
But in general, the Apple ecosystem is far more secure than the Windows ecosystem. The Windows, there's so many manufacturers, so many different things. The operating system, frankly, like Windows 10 just kind of sucks. And Windows just kind of has a history of all these zero-day exploits that Apple seems to take security a lot more seriously.
Yeah. Now, do we, you know, you mentioned the Yuba key, which is great to have. Do we need... besides that, would an external hard drive work for us to carry also as a backup to a backup?
Yeah.
Or that's a little bit too much?
Well, here's the thing. Like, if I was a business owner, and I am a business owner, but I am more paranoid than most. And it makes sense because I make my living digging people out of disasters all day.
Right.
So I, of course, if I wasn't more paranoid than the average person, I would have to have a hole in my head. I literally talk to dozens of people every week who are, you know, on the verge of mental collapse because they're trying to figure out how they're going to come up with $75,000 to pay for a ransom. And otherwise they're going to lose like 12 years of their engineering firm's CAD designs.
Right.
And they don't have cyber insurance to pay for it. And the clock is ticking. You know, so of course I'm more paranoid. So a couple things. When I'm traveling around personally, again, for the people who can see the camera, this is a product called the Aegis Secure Key. I use it. I'm just pulling this literally off my desk. It is a USB key. It's probably, let me see if I can light it up a little bit. But basically, it's encrypted. You can see there's a bunch of numbers on it.
Yeah.
And I have to put my code in to turn this thing on, to plug it in order for a computer to notice that it's there. All the chips on this thing are AES 256 encrypted. And if I drop it in a parking lot, no big deal. Okay. So there also are external hard drives like the Western Digital SmartWare drives, known as like the Western Digital Passports, that'll fit in your pocket. Right. And they are encrypted, but you have to put a password on them. And it should not be the name of your dog. It should be something difficult.
Right.
And again, and these things are portable. They're great for when we're on the move. But they need to be encrypted. So if you drop it in the parking lot, the bad guys don't get access to your QuickBooks files.
Right. Wow.
And from an audit perspective, like for backup, like if you're like, listen, man, like I've got one property. I don't have $100 a month to spend on all this IT mumbo jumbo. Yeah, you could spend $100 one time, buy a passport drive, but then you need to remember to manually back it up every couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And then you need to remember to unplug it when you're done with your backup. Because if somebody hacks your computer, we want there to be an air gap. We want air in between. Wow. And again, if you are one of those people that has a huge amount of discipline where you could actually do that, great. Most of us are busy. And if you have this strategy, if I'm going to back my data up myself every week, that's going to turn into a month. That's going to turn into 6 months.
Right.
That's just the way it is because we're human.
No, exactly. So it seems obviously there are ways to protect our data if we take the due diligence to do it, to get the hardware that you mentioned, that it's easy to carry because you could just put it in your pocket or like you said, in your keychain. So where do you, so for you and your company, Brian, how did the pandemic affect you guys in any way at all?
Yeah, we're busier than ever, especially on the cyber response side, because what happened is, you know, I don't know, roughly 80 million Americans are working from home probably now.
Right.
That we're not working from home. And we had in the world of IT, in the greater ecosystem, we had this system where we had these firewalls, these hardware firewalls protecting our small business networks. Mm-hmm. And we had all of our employees on big, heavy desktop computers that lived in our office. And now, in like a week, we had to get 80 million people working from home. And all of them are not behind the company firewall. They're probably not behind any firewall.
Right.
They probably have their internet cord plugged into their cable modem. And that's a terrifying thing to me, but that's how a lot of us are getting by right now. And the companies that we work for are under tremendous, incredible financial strain. And they're not in the mood to spend $5,000 on a new firewall that will allow for like encrypted VPN tunneling from all our employees from home with the MAC address of the computer. And it's, you know, registered known devices and two-factor authentication. And like their old firewall doesn't maybe have all that.
Right.
And boy, like, man, I don't want to spend that kind of money right now. I'm trying to make payroll. So because of that, you know, the field of opportunity for the bad guys has widened big time.
But also too, right, Brian, that you touched base on earlier where you had the celebrities that got hacked. But wasn't it a year ago or earlier? I don't think it was earlier this year. Maybe it was a year ago, whenever the timeline was. Didn't Wells Fargo also, or one of those big banks get hacked? Right.
Well, Equifax was, everybody gets hacked.
Right.
If you're a big enough target, they will get you. The question is, how bad is it?
Right.
When we perform a service called risk consulting, where we are cyber risk consulting, when we go into some of these large organizations, we work really, really, really hard to make sure that we're doing all the best things to prevent the hack.
Right.
But then you have to start to think, okay, so when they hack you, then what? It's like, whoa, thought you said they're not going to hack me if I pay you. It's like, no. They still might hack you. And we need to be very, very thoughtful with the user permissions and the network, how the networks are segregated and how we detect the hack. What systems do we have in place when all of a sudden 5,000 files get encrypted out of the blue Friday at 6 o'clock? You probably want some network monitoring software to say, whoa, that's weird. I've never seen that before. Kick that dude offline, open up a ticket for a security firm to log in and see what the hell happened. So, you know, it's But yeah, all the, like, Equifax is probably the most well-known massive financial, you know, they had the entire United States, like everybody who lived here, social security numbers and credit history. And, you know,
I mean, that was a field day for the bad guys.
Ooh. That was a big one.
Yeah. So, you know, it seems obviously we have the technology, or let's say someone like you have the technology for a desktop, for a portable MacBook Air. But what about the phone? If you have, because you're going to have emails, you're going to have maybe some files here. Do we need to use this as our carry, like our portable office? Or should we leave that information just for our MacBook and our desktop?
So again, so one of the cool things about that YubiKey that I was telling you about is it talks, you know, through the air to my phone. And lets me log into stuff there too. Okay. So that's that. So again, I don't need to have like two sets of passwords, one for my desktop, one for my phone. The phone itself. Okay, people, please, please lock your phone with a long 6-digit password at the very least. Please. I know your toddler wants your phone and he needs it to play Candy Crush or whatever. Because this is my life too.
Right.
But the temptation to not lock your phone, it really hurts, because when you drop that phone, when you leave it at the pool or the beach, some dude swipes right and he's in your stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe he's a good guy who's in your stuff to figure out how to contact you to get it back to you. Maybe he's not. Right. So, and you have to perform patch management. So I can't tell you how many people I bump into where they haven't patched their iPhone in 2 years.
And what does patch mean? Because I know someone's going to
ask that. So about once a month, Apple will come out with an upgrade to their operating system, to iOS. Android.
So I don't mean to cut you off, because Brian, I'm one of those guys, when I get that update, 99 out of 100, I'm going to ignore it.
Ah!
So,
yeah,
so I got caught out there, but I have to admit it. I do that on my phone and even on my laptop. I'm like, oh, God, another update.
Okay. Now understand the reason you're feeling like, oh my God, another update. Cause you know, you're seeing like this wave of updates. Like this, like the third one this month. Where it's coming from is not that they're producing features that you're going to love, and they're the features you're going to love are just pouring out of these phones. That's not it. The iOS, and I'm sure Apple hates to hear this, but to me personally, for what I do with my phone, they haven't had a single update that impacted my life in 5 years.
Okay.
It's got a camera. It's got my email.
Right.
I'm good. Right? Like, oh, I'm not a super user who's going to, you know, read a bunch of patch notes and, oh my God, the coolest feature ever just came down. So why are they patching like crazy? It's because of security.
Okay.
It's because they have detected, or a internet security firm has detected, a major problem where somebody can send you a text and then have root access to your phone and start copying all your data off.
Okay. Well, listen, you convinced me.
So patch.
Yes, I will.
When those patches come out, you need to patch.
Right.
So lock it down, patch. And again, for me personally, Apple is slightly beyond Android, in my opinion, as far as security. You know, both Google and Apple are very good with security in general, but Apple is probably that much more secure, mostly just because they're not directly profiting as much as Google from stealing all my personal data and listening to everything I do, because they don't run a search engine, you know?
Right. And I've seen now lately with Google, like if I get into my email, they want like a two-step verification.
They're starting to make it mandatory.
I've seen that.
To try to drag some of these late adopters to the two-factor party.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. And it'll often say, like, trust this computer?
Yes,
the answer is no.
Yeah,
the answer is no.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's my computer. why wouldn't I trust it? Because of what I was talking about 5 minutes ago.
Gotcha.
Good security starts with the assumption that you got hacked someday. Well, if they hack your computer and you have trusted your computer at all these services, guess what they're logging into? All your stuff.
Yeah.
Trust this computer, negatory, forever. Okay.
All right. No, that's great. Now I know because Brian, I've done it. I'm like, oh yeah, it's my work. It's my personal. Yeah, of course I trust it. Gotcha.
I don't trust it. Trust nobody.
No, I gotcha. Listen, Brian, I could talk to you for another hour. My God, the amazing. And we just probably just the surface of it. Brian, if somebody want to get in contact with you, what's the best way?
Yeah. So again, after this, I'm going to send a kind of quick step guide to like dramatically improve your security.
Yeah. I'll put those free on the show notes. Yeah.
It's ungated, you know? So if you're like, if I scared the crap out of you, good. That's what I'm trying to do.
You
but
did.
Not because there's not real boogeymen. The boogeymen are real. 100%. Freddy right. Krueger is coming for you. So you've got to step up your game. We made a quick step guide that takes about 2 or 3 hours that'll take your security from the basement, which is where it is, to like probably like a 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Which is better than where you are, believe me.
No, I believe it. Yeah.
And again, if I'm Brian Gill from Gillware. If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, ask me any questions, just Google for Brian Gill, Gillware. I'll pop right up on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I'll put that up on the show notes. Yeah.
If you're a larger enterprise and I really scared you and you actually want professional consulting where we come in with people that are way smarter than me and come in and actually look at your IT security, look at your network topography, march you through like a 6 to 12 month boot camp where they make incremental measurable progress on about 70 different areas. That's over at a company called tetradefense.com. And those are wonderful people. That's not really for the micro businesses. That's some pretty, it's the higher end stuff that you're not going to do with 5 or 10 employees. But, you know, if you're calling from a larger firm that's got 100+ employees and a lot of risk to manage, that's what they're there for.
That sounds good. And do you cover just the Wisconsin area or do you cover the United States? You know, this is all
yeah,
over?
We're both companies serviced nationwide. You know, okay. Probably 1% of our business comes from Wisconsin. It's okay. A small population. So
Sure. Well, Brian, again, thank you so much. I mean, you scared the hell out of me, and that was a perfect. You did a great job. And again, Brian, thank you so much for being on Peer-to-Peer Real Estate. Really, really appreciate it.
William, you're the man. Stay safe, everybody.
Thank you. Well, everyone, that was Brian Gill, chairman of Gillware, Inc. Brian, thank you so much for being on today's Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. You can find him at gillware.com. That's gillware.com. Brian, thank you so much again for being on Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. Really, really appreciate it. You can find me at peer2peerrealestate.com. That's peer, the number 2, peerrealestate.com. Check out our blog, our resource page, and a host of other things. Hopefully, we'll upgrade this website sometime in August. I wanted to do it in July, but, you know, things happen. So, anyway. Also, please go to Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe, leave a review. Tell us how we could make this show better. And before I go, guys, there's a couple of more things. Do not give up on your dreams. Fight for it. Guard it. Protect it. Don't let anyone talk you out of it. And I really believe if you keep the momentum going, good things will happen. Anyway, on behalf of Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show, I'm William Morales. Until next time, thanks, everybody, and please stay safe. Bye.